Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Sam here. Welcome to the AEW Match Guide. Just a few notes before we get started and hit the music on today's episode, where we'll be talking about Bryan Danielson versus Eddie Kingston from Revolution 2024. And the announcements are something I'm very excited about, because it's about Grand Slam in Australia, in Brisbane, coming up in just a couple of weeks. It will be my first live AEW show. So for those of you who've been following this podcast for a while, you'll understand that I am very excited about this coming up. And I've got a few things going on in the lead up to it and right before the show that I wanted to let you know about. So in the week beforehand, I'll be going on the Group Chat Wrestling podcast, where we'll be discussing the card. That's with a bunch of guys from England who I've come to know. I've actually had Andy on from the show to talk about Chris Jericho versus Bryan Danielson. That was back in December. Bunch of great lads, and we're going to be chatting about Grand Slam in the lead up, in the week before the card happens. Then on the day, as I said, I will be there. I'm so excited. And one of the things I am really excited about is meeting up with other AEW fans. And if you listen to this podcast and you're going to be there, I would love to even just say g'day to you. So before the show, we're having a bit of a social suplex get together beforehand at the Green Beacon Brewery in the Valley. So I'll probably be getting there at about 1:30 in the afternoon. We'll have some lunch, a few drinks, just have a chat. I know a few people are going to be there. Dicky, who's the guy that runs Chop Tees, he'll be there. I know a few other people who, just the various people from the Australian wrestling community, will be there with us. So that's from around about 1:30 at the Green Beacon Brewery in the Valley. We'll then jump on a train. It's about a 20-minute train ride to the entertainment center where the show will be. If you're interested in coming along to that, the full details for it are on the Social Suplex Discord. We have a specific thread for Grand Slam there. It's got all of the details. Or if you aren't on Discord and you can't get your head around it, just reach out to me directly. My contact details are in the podcast description. It'll be a great chance to get to meet people, get to chat about wrestling, get to chat about AEW, and get pumped for Grand Slam. Secondly, you may not want to go to that. You may not have time to go to that. You may have already other things lined up. If you're just going to the show, I'd still love to catch you there. So if you're just going to be at the show, send me a message. We'll organize to catch up, shake hands, say good day, maybe even share a drink. And look, I promise, if you're wearing Social Suplex or Match Guide merch, then that drink will be on me. I'm so excited about these things. And if you are Australian and you're going to be there, I'd love to meet you either beforehand, there, or who knows, maybe even after. We'll see where the night takes us. But that's all from me for now. So let's hit the music and get on with today's episode featuring Joseph Montecelio and talking about Bryan Danielson versus Eddie Kingston from Revolution 2024.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every episode, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW's history. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe and rate it on your podcast app of choice, support the podcast financially through Red Circle, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where we cover all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. We've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Sings, and Imp's WWE Adventure. You've become part of the Social Suplex community by joining our Discord, and check out the awesome Match Guide and Social Suplex merch on Chop Tees. Links for all of these things are in the podcast description. My guest for today is acclaimed wrestling YouTuber and the author of In the Blood and Other Stories. It's Joseph Monticello, and we're discussing Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson Continental Crown Championship match from Revolution 2024. How are you today, Joseph?
I'm doing good. I don't mean to bury you, but it's Joseph Monticello.
Oh, my mistake.
Don't worry about it. You can keep it in. but I just wanted to get that out there. But no, truly
honest.
I won't be making that mistake again,
I can tell you.
Totally okay. It's a pretty common thing. I hear it a bunch. But don't worry about it.
That's the equivalent of, you know, when we're talking about Eddie Kingston today, that's the equivalent of when Eddie Kingston and CM Punk squared up and he just immediately hit him with a spinning back fist. So well deserved, though. So
I think there was a match Eddie had on the Indies where the play-by-play commentator accidentally said hitting some Misawa-like chops. And I was like, That was Kobashi's thing. That was not Misawa. So a similar thing. But hazards of the trade. But I'm glad to be here regardless.
Yeah, no, look, it's a pleasure to have you on. I've been a fan of your YouTube series for a long time, both the stuff that you've done on King's Road, which for me in 2020 really introduced me to the four pillars of All Japan, a sort of a part of wrestling that I knew existed but had never really gotten myself into, and you sort of gave me the push along the way to do that. And I really enjoy the stuff that you do on modern wrestling as well. I've got to say, I don't consume the amount of wrestling that you do, Joseph.
That's probably a good thing for everybody involved. Especially
when you get on the end of year things and say, I watched 800 matches this year, and I just go, my mind just boggles, or I start trying to count. Oh, did I make 200, or what did I do?
It's probably more than you think. It's easier to do than some people think. Like, it really accumulates pretty fast.
Yeah, I suppose if you're watching like Dynamite every week, that's like five.
Yeah.
That's immediately about 250 matches that you're watching. So, yeah, you're probably right that it adds up quicker. I did bring up AEW, of course, an AEW podcast. You cover lots and lots of wrestling, but just generally over the years, what's been your sort of general history and your thoughts about AEW generally, Joseph?
I was pretty already fairly like stuck into like the deeper stuff, or, you know, like indie stuff, Japanese wrestling by the time AEW had started up. So there was already a certain level of hype by the time like even the rumors of the company were coming out. So I've basically been following it from the very beginning, just tracking its progress, its history. It's like it was clearly too important to ignore. Even from the word go, and they've had such highs and lows that it's hard for me to ever really look away. So I consider myself regularly invested in what happens with AEW, whether or not I'm always a big fan of what's being put on the TV. But I like to keep my finger on the pulse. And AEW is probably like the most regular wrestling viewing I get done. Even in my down periods when I'm ignoring it a little more, I still watch at least like one match a week, or I'll throw on the TV. It's just an easy part of my consumption routine at these days.
Yeah, it is. It's easy to just follow because it's got the weekly rhythm. You sit down, you watch Dynamite, you know, maybe you chuck on Rampage if you're busy on, for us, because of course we're ahead of America by a significant amount. If you're busy on a Saturday, or Saturday night, you don't have a lot else to do. You maybe chuck on Rampage, and then on Sunday, chuck on Collision. It's an easy rhythm to be in. And when you're sort of in it and just continually doing it, it really just becomes part of your routine, I think, and you sort of get invested into these characters whether you like it or not, just because you're so regularly seeing them.
Definitely, and it's a big enough company that has access to a high level of talent that there's just always going to be some good and some interesting no matter what. So, yeah, I'm in there. I'm tracking my faves, you know. Mox is still in there, Daniel Garcia, Darby Allin, just the regular suspects that always show up on my year-end lists. Mm-hmm. And I like to keep track of their work.
Well, speaking of regular suspects that show up on your year-end list, we are specifically talking about Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson today. They're two people that I know you're a huge fan of.
Massive,
and
yes.
And you've followed both of their careers extensively. And one of the reasons that I wanted to get you on for this match particularly was because of that. But because I know that you're... coverage of them goes back well before they're in AEW or WWE, and I'm curious, what's been your history with these guys? What were your first impressions when you saw them, and what did you think of any interactions and stuff that they did before they were, you know, in any sort of prominent positions?
So I probably would have discovered them around the same time. This would have been, I want to say, 2009, 2010. That was when I was first digging into ROH of the 2000s, finding matches from that time period, really digging into it. Danielson, I probably came across first, but Eddie wouldn't have been far off. He was a big part of ROH's 2009. He was all over HDNet, their HDNet TV series, and the iPay-per-views that they were running at the time. But Danielson was the first one to capture my attention. He was, by the time I had discovered the indies, Danielson was already, it was known that he was on the way to the WWE, and he already had this massive reputation, you know, best in the world. That was something already attached to his name. And going into the matches, discovering them, like, you know, digging in the crates, yeah, everything seemed to confirm that vibe. All the matches were pristine. They were wonderful. I became such a fan. Basically, immediately, he's just a captivating professional wrestler for so much of his career. So by the time Danielson had moved up to the WWE, Eddie Kingston was sort of hitting his peak on the independents, or at least peak in terms of success. Around 2011, he becomes the centerpiece of Chikara. He becomes their first Chikara Grand Champion, and it was sort of the path to that championship where I was able to really develop a deep love and fandom for Eddie Kingston's work. And yeah, their first ever match happens on a Chikara show. We Will Eat Michigan's Brains, I believe, is the title of the show. And I specifically watched that show because it was Danielson's first booking after being fired for choking out Justin Roberts with his tie. And I think that sort of kicked off my love for Chikara of that time period as well. It's a really good match. Great match, even. I highly recommend everyone check it out. It sort of lays a few basic groundwork themes that they like to touch on. Danielson being sort of this high-level talent that Eddie is sort of chasing, even in this more low-stakes kind of showcase feature on a Chikara indie show. And sort of Danielson's ability to work around Eddie's flaws as a character. He's not really applying the pressure the way he would in AEW in terms of the mind games, but, you know, it's easy for him to ground Eddie, bring him down to the mat and sort of pick him apart. And that's sort of a key theme in all their matches moving forward. So yeah, we only had that one match. They technically are in Cage of Death together, but they do not overlap. Danielson famously storms off during that match before Eddie even enters. So they did not get to do much on the indies together, and it's sort of something of a miracle that we get their 2020s run together.
Yeah, it's interesting how they would have definitely inhabited similar, like they definitely were in the same locker rooms at different points, and they sort of referenced that in AEW, but they're at very different points in their career, with Danielson getting so much acclaim in the 2010s and Eddie Kingston really trying to make his name and trying to forge a reputation. And, you know, Danielson was so much like the doyen of that scene at that time. You know, I got into wrestling in 2008. And I remember the first time I heard of Bryan Danielson, very funnily, was someone was saying that Matt Hardy, when he turned heel in 2009, should steal some moves off him or something.
Wow.
He should steal the hammer and anvil moves off.
That
the hammer
is
and anvil
a pitch.
Of Bryan Danielson.
That one really, really threw me off. What yeah. a pitch that is.
Yeah.
Heel Matt Hardy pulling from Bryan Danielson in the indies. My God.
From there, like, that was the first I'd heard of Bryan Danielson. But I remember then, you know, as you get deeper and deeper into fandom, people being like, oh, don't watch that WWE. This is where the real shit is. Like,
oh, yeah.
This Bryan Danielson, he's the man. And then very quickly, he turned up in the WWE and kind of started to prove that, you know, not only was he fantastic at wrestling that, like, maximalist ROH style and, you know, for the purists, he was someone they could really appreciate, but he was able to transition to, you know, a more broader mass market appeal that the WWE had, particularly in the, you know, the early 2010s. Let's hit fast forward, though, unless you have anything particularly you want to say about those early times. Let's hit fast forward and move through to 2021. Was there anything else you needed to add there, though?
I think one thing that's worth pointing out, at least in sort of the way that you mentioned, is that Danielson was basically the golden boy of the independents for the late 2000s. You know, after Punk, Joe had left, all those big names had gone on to TV. Danielson was it. He was the guy, and people really valued him in that way. So that's the sort of acclaim and respect that Eddie never really got in the same way at that same time period when their paths would have crossed on the independents. Eddie was known for burning bridges. He was a guy who was painted both in real life and as a character with the brush of being difficult to work with. So there was always a chip on Eddie's shoulder as far as not being as good as, or not being as wanted or respected as someone like a Bryan Danielson. And that's something that runs through their entire history together.
I did say let's fast forward to 2021. I didn't plan on asking this question, but let's go to 2020 instead. And I'm just curious, as someone who had such a deep appreciation and followed Eddie Kingston for so long, what was it like when he showed up in AEW and just made such an immediate and undeniable impact?
Oh my God, it felt like a miracle. An absolute miracle. Like, there he is on TV. We're all seeing it happen, and it's the greatest. It feels like the greatest thing ever. And it felt like the guy getting the credit he so long was denied, and seeing him be put on that platform. Yeah, it was astonishing. It was exhilarating. He was immediately given a sort of place of prominence, and it was everything a fan like me could have basically wanted from him. It was such a time, and it was a really important time in Eddie's career.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm not sure if you've listened to this episode, but it's way back in like episode 15 of this podcast. You know, we're nearly at 50 at this point. But when I reviewed the Moxley Eddie Kingston I Quit match with my friend Miz Fan, and he's another guy who was like so into Eddie from Shikara, and he called it exactly the same word. He said a miracle as well, because this guy was nearly lost to wrestling. These are his words, Miz Fan's words, not my own. This guy was nearly lost to wrestling, and it's a miracle that we got him. And you know, by in like what could have been potentially like the last thing he ever did in the business, he came out and just cut that incredible promo on Cody Rhodes and Arn Anderson, and just made himself absolutely, they couldn't not sign him for how clearly he knocked that out of the park and just made that impact. And, you know, then his work through 2020 and into 2021 speaks for itself.
Absolutely. And he was so jaded at this point, like in reality, like there's a lot of documentation about it. There's like a documentary on YouTube you can watch about it. And Eddie has spoken about it regularly. He was close to retiring. He had literally sold his boots, you know, before getting the AEW booking. So, you know, we were really at a tipping point there where it could have gone either way as far as Eddie Kingston's career is concerned. And it just took off in a truly wondrous way.
Mm. Let's go forward now to, of course, 2021, what is now what a lot of people think of as the peak of AEW, really, where Bryan Danielson shows up at the end of All Out. He has this back and forth with Kenny Omega. They have that match at Grand Slam. But pretty soon afterwards, both Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson enter into the 2021 Championship Contenders Tournament to face the winner of the Hangman Page and Kenny Omega match at Full Gear. And they face each other in the semifinals. It was at the time like a really exhilarating sort of mini program, even though it was a single match and maybe like a there was like a single promo segment beforehand. A really exhilarating sort of back and forth. How did you feel when you saw these guys come together in 2021, and then what you thought of this little deal that they did here?
Oh, so good. So good. Like, Brian, throughout much of his AEW career, has been sort of expected to ride the line between babyface and heel, depending on who he's facing. And the way he threaded that needle in that tournament segment, where he's clearly antagonizing Eddie,
yep.
But doing it under the facade of wanting a more sporting contest, you know, basically being like, oh, we gotta get the best out of Eddie, so I gotta treat him like shit so he'll really fight me. And it's so good, so smarmy, and but it feels complex, it feels true to what their dynamic was, or what people, at least like myself, imagined their true to life dynamic had been. You gotta remember that in something like there was a post-show press conference at one of the pay-per-views, Danielson had specifically called out Eddie and said Eddie has all the talent, but he's just lacking motivation, XYZ, all those things that had been said about Eddie for years and years. So to see it sort of translate into a TV program felt like a natural extension of what these characters meant.
Yeah, it just like immediately set out the character contrast that you've got here. You know, like you've got Danielson, who is this very disciplined person who, you know, they both love wrestling, but they've taken very different approaches to it, and they've lived very different lives as a result of the different approaches they've got and the different things that have happened in their lives. And, you know, Danielson says, like he mentions that Eddie's talented. He says, if it was your dream to be world champion, you'd think you'd put in some work. You make me mad because you're so tough, you're so talented, you've got so much heart, but you put in zero work outside of the ring. Maybe if you did that, you would be world champion already. Because Eddie's saying, like, I've fought for the world championship, and Danielson's like, but you never won it. And this is a guy who knows how to win world championships. He knows the work and the yards that need to be put in. So you've got, you know, someone that is really an everyman in Eddie Kingston that people love and people connect with, and who does have so much heart and grit, but he's up against someone who is extraordinarily disciplined and who is equally as talented, but puts in the hard yards that he feels makes him better than Eddie. And it just immediately sets up this brilliant character contrast. And of course it's summed up so completely by Danielson calling him a bum.
Oh, it's brutal. It is brutal, but it is exactly what the dynamic needs, is Danielson sort of looking down from his own ivory tower at Eddie.
And what did you think of the match?
Oh, it's great. Really great match. One of many in an excellent Danielson run, potentially a career best run for some. And it's all there. Like, you know, we get some of Eddie's King's Road tributes. There's he references his favorite match, 6-3-94. It's in there. Gosh, they do the targeting with the limb work. Brian knows that Eddie has a trick knee, things like that. And we get the submission victory at the end from Brian, or well, Eddie passes out. And that also tells us a lot about both guys. While still leaving a lot on the table that they would come to explore through 2023 into 2024.
Yeah, and of course, Eddie refusing to tap and refusing to shake Danielson's hand is kind of continues a long pattern that he's brought to life in AEW as well. Of course, he didn't tap initially with Moxley, didn't want to shake Moxley's hand at the end of their championship match in 2020 in Full Gear. And then after this of... you know, we're not here to talk about it, but there's a brilliant this sort of dovetails brilliantly into Eddie's match against Punk, where the reason that they sort of started their feud is he's kicking off backstage because he's pissed off and he didn't tap, and he's yelling and making a stink while Punk's trying to cut a promo, and that of course leads to that brilliant rivalry as well.
Yeah, there's a real thread there of Eddie having really having a lot of bitterness about how he was looked down on throughout the industry, and sort of pushing him up against these luminaries like Danielson, like Punk, like Moxley. Yeah, it's exactly the kind of friction you need to get the best out of Eddie.
You know, the one that I didn't think they made the most of is putting him up against Joe as well. Like, that could have been the next big step. I know they had matches, but like, they didn't get the promos, I don't feel like.
No, that one we still have a lot to gain from. Maybe one day we shall see. You never really know with how Tony books his TV.
Indeed. Of course, Danielson and Eddie, they kept bumping heads and running into each other through 2022 and 2023. You know, Eddie's character changed pretty significantly throughout that time. I feel like he mellowed out quite a bit. But just what did you think, and what are your memories of those two kind of running into each other and just kind of ending up in each other's circles so often throughout those 2 years? But, you know, before we get to the Continental Classic that really kicks off this rivalry that builds to Revolution.
It was just sort of a natural thing for them to intersect so much in that time, specifically because, you know, Eddie was reigniting his feud with Claudio Castagnoli. Claudio's a stablemate of Brian, things like that. But also, you know, these are two guys who came up in the same place, the same time, the American Indies in the 2000s. And it's just sort of, it just makes sense to have them in each other's, like, sort of circle. You know, oftentimes miscast as allies, oftentimes they're enemies. Yeah, they were just sort of perfectly placed guys with a lot of interesting dynamics and potential for emotion between them. So I always enjoyed whenever they got to share a screen together.
Yeah, it's something that I think AEW does really well, and I like about how AEW books, when you've got this big cast of characters and this web of characters, and it's almost like an extended universe of these wrestlers, and when they bump into each other, all that history comes through and it informs what's happening. Like, of course, the thing that I immediately think of is the original Anarchy in the Arena, and you've got that amazing visual of Eddie Kingston, like, limping to the ring with blood on his shirt, then carrying a can of petrol to light Chris Jericho on fire. But Chris Jericho's fighting with Bryan Danielson, and Eddie pours petrol on Danielson and Jericho, and Danielson takes absolute umbrage at that and slaps him, and that kicks off a fight, and ultimately they lose because of that. And like, I just love the way that these two characters that they've established have this rivalry in, you know, 2021. 6 months later, they're in this team together, and you know, it ends up costing them because they can't be, they're not on the same page. Eddie doesn't care about Danielson. Danielson's pissed off at Eddie, and they end up fighting and brawling. And as you said, like, it's part of the, it extends into the Claudio and Eddie feud as well, and everything that those two have got going on between them as well. What did you think of, like, Eddie's character change over through 2022, 2023? As I said, I feel like he mellows out a fair bit, particularly in 2023, but he doesn't have that sort of the rage that I feel like he had, you know, when he's fighting with and against Mox, and, you know, against Danielson the first time, and then particularly you see it against Punk, and then again with Jericho in start of 2022. By the time 2023 rolls about, I feel like he's changed a bit. Am I right in that, or what's your sense of it, Joseph?
Oh, 100%. The change is the whole point. The rage is why he loses. He always costs himself because he is angry, because he is too pissed off. You know, you mentioned Anarchy in the Arena. You know, if he hadn't tried to murder Chris Jericho, maybe Bryan Danielson just makes Jericho tap and they win the match. Do you know what I mean? Eddie loses focus when he's wrestling Claudio Castagnoli. You know, instead of targeting a limb, he gets too involved in brawling, so Claudio's able to open him up and just bomb him into the dirt. And it's basically the shift of a challenger becoming a champion. It was only when Eddie got his emotions under control and was able to push through the conflict without getting lost in it that he was able to achieve his big victories of 2023. So obviously there's the New Japan Strong win is not a major point. It's just sort of a thing that happens for Eddie that it's able to feed into stuff later on. But the big one is defeating Claudio and Arthur Ashe, where he doesn't lose his temper. He sticks to the plan. He nails the move that his hero told him to use, and he gets the big win. And it's through the Continental Classic that that sort of internal conflict resurfaces again.
It's interesting how, like, him picking up that New Japan Strong title, it really is an argument against AEW having partnerships and things like that, because I feel like it really took the wind out of the sails a little bit, because all of a sudden, this guy who, you know, and broadly, I love that they've got these partnerships, and it's a good thing, it's a positive thing, but for Eddie's story, like, I so wanted him to see, like, that triumph be, like, part of a narrative arc, and the Strong title, it clearly meant a lot to him. Like, the promo he cut after he won it in Corican was very passionate and like everything you want, but it was like, oh, I wish this had been part of a broader story, which then I feel like almost undercut what happened with him winning that ROH title against Claudio at Grand Slam. And I don't know, I felt like slightly underwhelmed, despite, you know, all the beautiful things that you outlined just there. What were your feelings, Joseph?
I don't particularly mind the Strong title win, just because I'm not in love with 2020's New Japan, so they can do whatever, and Eddie can pick up their belt, and it's whatever. Yeah, Eddie should beat everyone on their fucking roster. I don't give a fuck. you know, it was the big ones for me, you know? It was like, okay, Eddie can beat Kenta. Like, Kenta's washed, who cares? it's the mountains that were significant in Eddie's career. So Claudio was the big one in 2023, clearly. And so for me, it didn't take away anything from it. Everything New Japan adjacent with AEW sort of does feel secondary, whether AEW means it to or not. But that's just the way things go. New Japan has done the same thing to smaller promotions in Japan, so, you know, it's just the cycle. There's always a bigger fish.
Yep, that's fair. And, well, the Strong title does become part of, like, this Continental Classic thing, so it's not to discount it completely, but, like, it sort of took the wind out of the sails for me a little bit. I don't know, maybe that's just me personally. But, that big win at ROH, it sets things up in ahead of the Continental Classic. You know, Eddie Kingston's riding high. For the first time in his time with AEW, at least, he's got the New Japan Strong title. He's got the ROH title. And Danielson and Eddie both go into the first Continental Classic for the Continental title. And Eddie puts the others on the line to create the Continental Crown, a triple crown with, modern American belts that harkens back to Eddie's beloved triple crown of All Japan.
Yes.
Yes, and Danielson and Eddie, of course, they were very big parts of the Blue League, along with Andrade El Idolo, Brody King, Daniel Garcia, and Claudio. But I feel like those guys really were the narrative heart of particularly the Blue League, but the Continental Classic in general, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. The post-match promos we got out of Danielson and Eddie for those 3 to 4 weeks, however long the Continental Classic lasted.
Incredible.
Man. Yeah, incredible. Like, some of the best wrestling TV that wasn't on TV. Like, just, I remember being excited on Twitter, like, when it would be like 1 a.m. in the States and 1 p.m. here, like, in the middle of the afternoon, and I'd be like, waiting, when are those post-match promos going to drop? They're a key part of why the whole tournament is fantastic. And of course, you have two all-time greats like Danielson and Eddie. They're going to make the most of such a simple setup. You know, they only need the conflict. They only need a reason to dislike someone or have something to aim for. And they'll make a whole thing out of it. They'll take a mile if you give them an inch. And that's exactly what the Continental Classic felt like. Their two matches in that tournament were some of the best of the whole year for me. The semifinals in particular, I think I ranked it number 2 match of the year. I'm probably one of the biggest fans of that particular match among our circle. I really, really love the semifinal bout from the Continental Classic. I would argue it's probably their best match together. But yeah, I'm big fan of how they worked that tournament.
Yeah, it was an interesting positioning of them as well. Like Danielson was kind of this super in control, like monk warrior almost throughout, you know, like he'd be meditating in these backstage promos, very calm, very collected. And the only person that he seemed to like have any like emotion towards was Eddie Kingston, who you like he continued to call a bum. And before their you know Blue League final, he said he will never beat Eddie. He will never beat Brian. Eddie will never beat Brian Danielson. He like turned his back on him in the ring when Eddie's firing up. And at the same time, like Eddie, he loses his first two matches, so he you know goes in from riding high with the two titles and putting them on the line as well as this potential new one. And then he loses his first two matches to Brody King and Brian Danielson. And then he's fighting from behind, which is a great position to put someone like Eddie Kingston in.
Yeah, just classic tournament booking. You know, you have the babyface trying to scrap their way up, and they have this massive obstacle that they had yet to overcome in their career. And he fucking does it. And it's so good. It's so, so good. There's a moment in that match where Eddie chops Brian so hard that defeat is written on Brian's face. Like, you just see it. Like, the horror in Brian's being when he realizes he's going to lose to Eddie fucking Kingston. Oh, it's so good. I adore that match. That match feels like Christmas to me. I should watch it again this time of year.
And that striking you mentioned, I had that noted down because that's going to feed into the match we're going to talk about in depth at Revolution. And Eddie, of course, he goes on to win it. He beats Danielson in the semifinals, someone he'd never beaten before. And then he beats his friend and rival, John Moxley, in the grand final. For me, that match was special. I love the Moxley and Eddie Kingston rivalry and relationship. Moxley's my favorite wrestler, the listeners will know. So I like that 2020 I Quit match, that ages like a fine wine. Every time I watch that, I think more and more highly of it for how perfectly it times everything and how perfectly the emotion and the action in the story all crescendo together. So I just love their relationship generally. And then you've got this great match, very fiery. You know, they're beating the absolute piss out of each other. And at the end, Moxley kind of like looks at him for 1 second, like, what's going on here? And then he embraces Eddie because, you know, ultimately they're mates. And he's happy for him that he's achieved this amazing career highlight. You know, certainly a real high point for Eddie Kingston. He's beaten these two guys, but things continue on, and Brian Danielson still doesn't respect him.
I think after the Continental Classic, the narrative thread that they leave open is that Danielson recognizes his tactical error, where in the semifinal he became too. He thought he could bully Eddie into defeat. He was feeling himself too much, so he was too focused on antagonizing Eddie instead of laying the strategic foundation needed to actually win the match. And Eddie had sort of regained a composure and control that basically neutralized Danielson's mind games, so Danielson couldn't put in the work and Eddie wasn't going to break mentally. So Eddie pushes through and he wins the match. And it's frankly one of my favorite uses of in-ring work to tell what feels like a fairly complex emotional story, at least by the measures of pro wrestling. So I really have so much love for that particular bout in the Continental Classic.
And just to not belabor it, but, you know, the big thing that Danielson says to Eddie in 2021 is like, you never did the work. Like you never, you're so talented. You got so much heart, all of this, but you never did the work outside of the ring. But to get himself right mentally, Eddie Kingston finally does the work to get himself right mentally. And that's what he needs. Like, it's him doing the work that allows him to, that enables him to actually achieve this level of success that Danielson didn't think he could have. But Danielson still thinks that he's better.
And, yeah, and because, build up, Yeah, the best part is that Eddie puts in the work in that match and Brian doesn't. And it's so beautiful to see him fall into his own trap. It's amazing.
And then, of course, in the build-up, I'm a bit split on the build-up to Revolution because I kind of just want these two to stand face-to-face in the ring with mics in their hands a little bit. But I do like, nonetheless, how they have Danielson going up against, like, Yuji Nagata, going up against Jun Akiyama, and then kind of taunting Eddie after both of those matches. And then, ultimately, Eddie then challenges Danielson to a match where, if he wins, not only will he have won again and win the title, but Danielson will have to shake his hand. What did you think of the build-up between the Continental Classic and then going into Revolution when they set up this match?
I agree with you where I think they missed a couple steps, you know? Like, there were a few more things they could have done to, like, really heat it up. But for what they did do, I enjoyed pretty much most of it. I enjoyed Brian trying to big league Eddie again. Basically trying to reclaim that position of control that he had over Eddie for so much of their rivalry. And I enjoyed, you know, the obvious thing of Brian sort of targeting Eddie's heroes. We all know how much Japanese wrestling means to Eddie Kingston. And to disrespect Jun Akiyama in the way that Brian did was a really... That was a nice way to sort of... heat things up again. I think that was the most personal thing that happened in that particular TV cycle. And it ties back into Danielson's previous strategy where he's trying to piss off Eddie. And that's when Eddie makes mistakes.
And I like how Eddie at this point embraces what Danielson's been saying. Danielson's saying he's a bum. Eddie says, well, I'm the king of the bums. And it's the perfect thing. Like, it's the perfect title for Eddie, because obviously the King stuff, which is part of his name and you may have been part of his branding, but King of the Bums, he's a working class hero, he's a folk hero, and so of course he's the king of the working people, he's the king of the hard, the guys that have to do it hard and have to do it tough, the people who are underappreciated. He's the king of the bums, and he embraces that at this point and just points that out, which I love. I love that he sort of turns what Danielson said on Danielson.
Yeah, absolutely. Eddie, it also shows how Eddie, after that point in the Continental Classic, just refuses to be rattled. And it's a great marker of his growth as a character.
Also, we should just note Danielson at this point, he's just on like an absolutely godly run. You know, like through the Continental Classic, he was just doing absolute murder every single week.
No, that tournament run for having. Danielson was wild run.
And then afterwards he has a really good match at the Tokyo Dome with Okada, has the matches with Hechicero, and then a match that I absolutely love with Zack Sabre Jr. in New Japan, in Japan as well. Like, he is just operating on another level at that point.
For sure. Danielson is getting the big opportunities. You know, he's made it clear that it's his last full-time year as a pro wrestler. So he's getting the big matches, and he's more or less getting the most of them. I'd say he definitely got the most out of the Hechicero match, for example. Danielson, it's set up basically to be his year.
But we've got to get to this match. He's got to get to this match first. So, Joseph, just before we get to the actual match itself at Revolution 2024, is there anything else you'd like to add about the build-up and what went on prior to the pay-per-view?
I think that's pretty much it. I think we're ready to go and get into the big match we're here to talk about.
Excellent. But before we do get to the match, I would like to quickly plug the amazing Social Suplex merch line that we released on Chop.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tease. So if you haven't seen it yet, I'd love for you to visit Chop Tease and go into the Social Suplex section. Our merch has been uniquely designed in conjunction with Chop Tease to reflect the different colorful characters we have on each show on the Social Suplex network. We've got the One Nation Radio hoodies that are designed to be like the Dream Team, keeping it strong style zip up hoodies, Tunnel Talk Snuggies. We've got Imp's Adventures teacup. And my personal favorite, of course, is the Match Guide shirt and hoodie. Me and Dickie, the site's owner, we created it to not just stand out in a sea of bland wrestling designs, but also to commemorate the AEW 5th anniversary match guide list that we released earlier this year and Joseph so nicely contributed to as well. It's got the show's logo on the front and lists the top 50 AEW matches in the style of a Band World Tour t-shirt on the back. The thing that stood out to me most when I got my shirt was that it is such a quality garment. It feels great to wear. We've all had those wrestling shirts that we get and they stretch and they fade after you've only worn and washed them a few times. But these shirts are made from high quality materials, so they don't just look great, but they will last as well. At Social Suplex, we're incredibly proud of this collaboration. So don't wait. Head to Chop Tees and get yourself some merch that won't just look great, but it will help the network. Also, the first order that you place with Chop Tees has 10% off and you don't pay any shipping worldwide, which is absolutely fantastic for someone who lives in Australia or probably someone who lives in the Philippines like Joseph as well. So we do thank Chop Tees for this collaboration. So let's get to the match. It is Bryan Danielson versus Eddie Kingston from Revolution 2024. For the Continental Triple Crown, as we always do on the AEW Match Guide. Let's start off by giving the match its flowers. Dave Meltzer gave this match 4.75 stars. Cage Match currently has it rated at 8.45. And when we did the definitive match guide earlier this year, it came in at 31st for the matches that happened in the first 5 years of AEW's existence. Interestingly enough, that along with the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros, it was Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson was the most represented rivalry in the top 50. Both of those rivalries had three matches making it into the top 50 for Eddie and Danielson. This was the highest rated at 31st, but the semi-final match that you talked about before, Joseph, it came in 35th, and their 2021 match, which I would probably say is my personal favorite, came in 37th. So it's a match that is well-loved, was well-loved at the time and has been well-remembered, I think, a year or so on. One that we're going to dig into right now. So let's get to Revolution 2024. It's about the third match on the card. And prior to their entrances, in an interesting thing that they sort of did at this point for the Continental Classic matches was Lexi Nair and Renee Paquette did pieces to camera backstage, talking about each wrestler's mindset going into the match. The rumor coming into this year, 2025, is that AEW is going to be more sports-based. It's not the first time that they've said that, but
many points in their history. I swear, this time it'll stick. Oh my God.
Look, if they wanted to, though, going back to this would be a fantastic idea. I really like these little pieces to camera that Lexi and Renee did with the wrestlers sort of shadow boxing in the background.
I also really enjoyed it. I was sort of thinking it over when I was watching this match again for the podcast, and I realized that it might be an homage to the production of old All Japan main events, where we would have a sort of backstage reporter speaking directly to camera while the wrestlers are just sort of preparing in the halls of Budokan Hall or wherever it may be, and then going straight into their entrances. They rarely even spoke to the interviewer back there. And I thought that maybe was a point of homage. I know that Eddie had specifically requested or helped come to life a similar production homage for his match at Arthur Ashe against Claudio Castagnoli. So I think that was sort of a trend there as well, sort of pulling from the old tricks in the All Japan playbook.
Yeah, well, look, I figured it would probably, with you mentioning that, I figured this must have been an Eddie Kingston thing, because he of course, he's very public love for that period of wrestling. But, you know, if we want to emulate some great main events and get like an incredible main event feel, they could do a lot worse than looking back at 90s All Japan to sort of get that vibe and get that energy around the product and the main event scene. I really liked it. And I thought it was interesting how they said as well. Like, Lexi sort of reflected a little bit on what you mentioned, Joseph, the Danielson's mindset going in was that he's got a game plan and he thinks he can execute it. And if he executes it, he'll win.
Yeah. And we had heard Danielson express regret about how he wrestled the semifinal bout against Eddie Kingston. Mm. He was commentating for the finals match between Eddie and Moxley. And Danielson's on there saying, you know, he lost his temper. He lost control of the match. And so we know coming into this bout that he recognizes his mistake. And a big part of the match is seeing how Danielson adjusts to sort of correct where he had gone wrong, and thus seeing how Eddie responds to the new challenge that Danielson would bring to him.
Mm. Indeed. Of course, both men get out to raucous receptions. You know, the crowd's chanting for both men. I think they're a little bit louder for Eddie Kingston, which...
God, Eddie's so over. He's so over. I miss him so much.
Yeah. It's crazy how Eddie Kingston, he can get... Like, he's this folk hero that, as we said, like, he came from nowhere. His career in AEW nearly didn't exist. You know, he was someone who they could have picked up in 2019, right? Like, he wasn't in their initial round of recruits, but he could have been someone that they could, like, he was around at that point. He could have been part of their initial recruits, but he wasn't. And yet he's out there and he's getting louder receptions than guys like CM Punk, Brian Danielson, like royalty, absolute royalty to this crowd of like this set of wrestling fans, and he gets louder receptions for them, and it's definitely on display in the start of this match.
I mean, how could you not? He is so sincere and so real that it cannot help but elicit such powerful emotion from a viewing audience, and it is also so vindicating for people who have been fans of him for so long to see, like, yes, clearly, obviously what we knew to be true for so long. And here it is on a grand stage. If you just give him the mic, if you just give him the time, he'll make the absolute best of it. And he has.
And I wasn't part of these discussions, really. The first time I saw, I think I came across Eddie Kingston in any significant manner was when he showed up in the NWA. But I imagine back in the day, there was probably forum posts highlighting all of Eddie Kingston's flaws and saying he'll never make it because of X, Y, Z. But, you know, like, his strength is just so undeniable that, like, they absolutely overcome and then some any flaws he might have.
For sure. And a lot of those flaws, if we're talking about reality, is that, you know, a lot of those flaws were self-imposed, you know. That reputation he had of not being the easiest guy to work with, that's true. And I bet he would say the same about it as well. There was a real sense of Eddie Kingston's career of that guy just keeps getting in his own way. And there's some truth to that. And there's also some truth to some people probably not making it as easy for him as it could have been. Just getting him to this point, to this stage, and getting the chance to prove everybody wrong and prove all his supporters right. It's special.
Let's get into the match. It starts out with them trading strikes, looking at low kicks, and Danielson immediately gets Eddie's left leg. But the first major exchange, I think, is Eddie landing a series of chops and headbutts on Danielson. It includes his machine gun chops in the corner before he hits a tope suicida to the outside. I'm going to be honest here, Joseph, like, as I said, I love Eddie, but I don't love the way he does the corner chops. Like, sometimes they just don't have the impact that I need.
I've seen so many people say this about Eddie, and I personally don't get it. I think he's one of the better machine gun choppers of the people who attempt it, because he gets a much wider rotation on it than a lot of imitators do.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty hard move to pull off, to be honest. But one thing I do love is his tope. Like, he probably shouldn't be doing a tope because, like, you look at him, but and it's so inelegant. But I kind of love how inelegant it is. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of the
inelegance
point, right?
Is like, the point. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it looks like it would hurt him and the other person.
Mm-hmm. That's a Hansen style tope right there. Just a big dude chucking his weight at you, and you look at it and you think you're gonna die. It's the best.
Yeah. But look, I think the match really starts, and where it really starts to hit its narrative stride is after the tope. They're on the edge of the ring, and Danielson kind of lulls Eddie backwards and then dodges a chop near the corner post, which Eddie nails with full force with his hand. And we've got to put a pin in that, because as we remembered, what was the thing that shook Danielson to his core in the semifinal? It was Eddie's striking. And mm-hmm. Danielson immediately jumps on that. He puts it in, puts Eddie into some sick holds. He stretches his fingers out. He stomps on Eddie's arm. He hits a shotgun drop kick to the shoulder. Immediately, like, we know the narrative to this match. Danielson is taking out Eddie's arm.
And it is a much clearer strategy than what Danielson brought to the Continental Classic semifinal. So here, it's not just, let's make Eddie upset and then see what happens. Here, Danielson is taking Eddie seriously. He knows what Eddie's key weapon is, which is the striking power in his arm, which informs basically all of Eddie's offense. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the chops, but also the elbow strikes, the punches, and the big Yuriken, which Eddie has won so many matches with. And I think that even attacking the arm is sort of I think Excalibur mentions it as well. It is an implicit sort of concession from Danielson that he's dealing with a truly dangerous and worthwhile competitor.
Indeed. I love the facial expressions from both men when they're doing this. Like, Danielson, like the effort you see in his face and the malice as well. Like, you can see he means it. He's going hard at Eddie's fingers, his arm. Like, the whole arm is under attack. And Eddie's selling, of course, like, it's Eddie Kingston selling. Like, it's perfect. He's just, like, the way he grits his teeth and just shows the pain in his eyes and in his face, it's brilliant.
And it's also, I love how they built up to that big transition as well. Like, at multiple points in the run-up to Eddie chopping the ring post, Danielson kept trying to catch Eddie's arm when Eddie would throw a chop, where previously, Danielson would stand there and try to trade with Eddie. You know, Eddie would hit him and Danielson would hit back. This time it was much more evasive from Danielson. So Eddie would throw the chop and Danielson would try to trap the arm to try and sort of get his attack going on the arm, or even just to restrain Eddie and sort of take away the power from those chops and stuff the momentum that Eddie was building. And even on the ring post, my God, the detail that they put into that transition. Anybody who's watched any Gunther match has seen someone chop a ring post, and that's the start of the big handwork or comeback, whatever it may be, right? But here, the small detail that Danielson lures Eddie into position by sort of feeding into Eddie building steam by hitting repeated chops, and Danielson just taking a step back at a time until he's finally able to duck it and let Eddie doom himself, or in Danielson's mind, at least, doom Eddie. I just think they put so much effort into these small things that many of us have seen a million times over and over, and they make it feel fresh and real. And that is a key strength that both men have always had in pro wrestling.
And I like that straight after it, Eddie, he can no longer go for chops. So he now goes for throws. He hits an exploder. He gets a DDT, and then he goes for the stretch plum, but he can't get leverage on it because of his arm. And that's when Danielson, like, starts to take over. Like, Eddie's not only is his chops inhibited, but so is his submission of the stretch plum. And Danielson, at that point, Eddie can only really get in the scrappiest of offense, but Danielson really starts to take over. But then when Danielson can't immediately put away Eddie and immediately damage him, it starts to frustrate Danielson as well. And at this point, Schiavone comes out with a great line. He says, "We aren't watching a fight, we're watching a struggle." And it really is like a struggle for both wrestlers at this point, because Eddie's got to fight through the arm, but Danielson also can't put away Eddie the way that he hoped.
Yeah, and that particular point of it being a struggle too, I think what I really love about this particular feud is that you could say it was both an external and internal struggle. And for most of that, it's Eddie, right? Eddie has to overcome the anger and sort of learn the focus of a champion. But when he finally achieves that, now we sort of see it turned on its head, where we have to find out if Danielson can sort of finally put the pieces back together. And can he beat an Eddie who he can't anger? Can he beat this focused, rejuvenated Eddie Kingston, who has found a certain peace within himself and a concentration in the ring that he had not shown before in the past? And it's a great way of making Danielson, for the first time in the whole feud, feel like the actual challenger.
Yeah, and you can see Danielson isn't really comfortable in that position as challenger as well against Eddie Kingston. He's getting frustrated in being in that position, even though Eddie's damaged, but he's able to keep fighting through.
Yeah, and you sort of see it on Danielson's face too. It is sort of a mix of, as you mentioned, frustration, but there is sort of a begrudging respect that starts to form mid-match, where there is not only frustration, but also a sense of acknowledgement. And the way that Danielson is able to convey that complex emotion, that is a complex emotion. He's able to convey that without feeling contrived or hammy or over the top. It's just the brilliance of that man.
Yeah, there isn't this immediate big respect spot, so to speak.
Absolutely.
It's subtly done and then sort of made more evident in their post-match proto. But sort of continuing on with the match, in 2024, I think we had a number of really good moments where finishes were no-sold. And one of them happens in this match where Eddie hits multiple Urukens, but his arm is just so damaged that it has no effect on Danielson, flips off of him, flops off of him. And I just love how they build to that spot so well with the damage to his arm, and then the no-selling of the finisher immediately makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this case, I wouldn't even count it as no-selling. It's just the correct selling. It's the appropriate selling for the moment. Do you know what I mean? It's not that Danielson is necessarily overcoming the move. It's just that he had damaged the move to the point where it won't work. You know, Eddie's hand is dust at this point. You're not going to beat a man with dust. I think it is a great addition to the fabric of the match. And it speaks to how detail-oriented both these guys are, that they are able to give us a reason for Danielson to be safe from the Hurricane. You know, they're able to give us a reason for Eddie to be able to deploy that move, which will pop the crowd, but not end the match. And I think that's just brilliant structuring and application of wrestling logic and psychology. It's everything you want from these guys.
But then you also get another big pop when Danielson locks in a move that's finished their matches previously for him as well, when he locks in a triangle and tries to put Eddie out. But Eddie, this time, he's able to fight through, and he gives a thumbs up to the ref when he gets checked on, and the crowd just loves that. They're so into it. And they know the importance of the triangle choke to this match and this series.
Yes, and Danielson had made a big point, too, of mocking Eddie throwing the finger up. He had sort of made it a point that Eddie throwing up the finger is just a sign of weakness. It's basically Eddie having a self-defense mechanism to say, "Oh, I gave it my all, but really you're giving up," is what Danielson is sort of saying about that. So for Eddie to throw up the thumbs up instead of the middle finger shows the growth that Eddie had had as a character, that he's not going to just be spiteful and drop. He's going to push through and keep fighting.
Mm. And we get even more sort of fire and fight through where Danielson tries to kick Eddie while he's downed. But that only like fires him up more. And then they sort of exchange suplexes and they both roll through. But then Eddie finally hits a half and half on the dragon. Like that sort of coming back from getting kicked in the face and then no selling suplexes. It's done so often in wrestling in, 2024, 2025. These guys nail it so well because of the expressions on their face and the way that they convey it with their body language. Like Eddie's glass-eyed, gritting his teeth while he's taking punishment and like trying to no-sell and push himself through it. It's unparalleled in wrestling. Like no one does it like him.
Eddie Kingston has such a love for the material. And I think this is what a lot of people who... Eddie, as we all know, is a truly one of the nerds. Like, yep. I feel so confident in saying this about Eddie Kingston, all right? That man is deeply in love with pro wrestling and its history. And I'm sure many pro wrestlers will say the same. But what separates them is that Eddie always understood, like, the spirit of what he was emulating. I think more so than other people who pay homage and pay tribute to certain things. Eddie Kingston understood why these tropes and these things worked. And for example, here you talk about, well, we see people roll through suplexes and no-sell them all the time. Eddie has always understood that it's not, the joy of it is not that he doesn't feel the suplex. The joy is that he feels it deeply and he still pushes through. Yep. And seeing the pain sink in and being overcome is what makes moments like that feel so rich. It's not the same if he lands on his head and he's right back on his feet. I'm fucking fine, you know. And there's moments for that. There are moments where you can apply that exact thing where someone just eats a move and it doesn't touch them. There are definitely moments for that, and we will see Danielson use that later in his year. In 2024, I'm sure you'll talk about that in some other podcast. But for Eddie, it has always been about feeling the pain and overcoming the pain, and it's beautiful to see applied. Really, there's only so many people in wrestling history who I think had a real grasp of that, and Eddie is up there with the people he idolized in terms of applying it in all the best ways.
I mean, not to get like too philosophical with the whole thing, but that's life, right? Like feeling the pain and then overcoming it, like fighting through it. That's why he's so great. Like, because
Eddie Kingston's life, especially. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, let's get to the final moments of the match though. They rise in a clinch, throwing strikes at each other in a clinch, which Danielson ultimately gets the better of. Cause as we know, Eddie Kingston's striking is being neutralized. Danielson goes for Busaku knee, but Eddie hits a clothesline, and it's like such an imperfect clothesline as well, but it just collects Danielson so completely. And then he hits that stacked powerbomb. He gets the three count for the win and the match. They sort of rise slowly. Eddie's like visibly emotional. The crowd's chanting for him, and Danielson is on his knees. Doesn't look like he wants to do it. And when he doesn't immediately offer to shake hands, Eddie kind of walks away before Danielson calls out to him, eventually offers the hand, and they shake. Joseph, what did you think of the ending of the match and then, of course, the post-match as well?
Oh, man. Before the bell rings, there's this really great moment. You know, before the final stretch, there is this strike exchange where they just get down to just slaps and punches.
Yeah.
It's so fun to see Danielson realize that after all the work, right? Like, he didn't put in the work in the semifinals. This time, he put in the work. He got the hand. He picked it apart. He took away the Yurikan. But when it was finally down to just pure guts and glory, it was still Eddie Kingston that came through on the other side. Just immaculate storytelling, in my opinion. And the handshake, for a nerd like me, you know, who followed them for decades at this point, just cherry on top of such a powerful rivalry. And it speaks to the level of talent that they've always displayed, that even then, with such a neat bow on it, I still think there's more. If they ever do a rematch, it'll be like, oh, maybe, yeah, let's go. Let's get back to it. Let's explore more options between these two. But as far as a satisfying and thrilling conclusion to a long rivalry, I don't think it gets much better than this in the year 2024.
It's pretty fantastic ending. Just the way they just draw out the ending as well. And of course, like the Eddie Kingston handshake stuff, even if you'd only watched him in AEW, you would know that a handshake means a lot to Eddie Kingston. But for those of you such as him, such as yourself, who've watched and dug into his whole career, like, the Eddie Kingston handshake runs deep, right? Like,
it's
been
Kingston,
a huge part of like positive and negative things in his career.
That man started a multi-decade rivalry because Claudio Castagnoli wouldn't shake his hand backstage, not even when the cameras were on. Yeah. Backstage, he was so mad about it. He held onto a grudge for 20 years. Mm. And there's an interesting point here too, where I think Eddie fears that Danielson will Welsh on the deal, because Eddie had Welshed on the deal before. Eddie had lost an I Respect You match to Claudio Castagnoli in Chikara, and Eddie didn't abide by that rule. He didn't shake Claudio's hand. He didn't tell Claudio he respected him. So I think there's that fear from Eddie in this moment of, well, I know people can just turn their back on whatever they say, and it's that I just have to deal with it. And so to finally have him be rewarded his catharsis, it's lovely.
Mm. And as we sort of, let's move on to like the YouTube thing, because it makes some of these things like a lot more explicit. It's like a beautiful little thing that aired after the pay-per-view on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend. So both men are in the backs, they're in the doctor's room. They've got ice on their things, and Eddie thanks Danielson. He says, all he ever wanted was the respect of his peers. You know, that, I guess that's why the handshake means so much. Like, all he ever wanted was the respect of his peers. He doesn't care about promoters, Twitter fans. Hey, come on, guys. Come on, Eddie. You can't go, don't go that far. what lasts to him is respect from the boys. And Daniel says, you fucking earned it. Which is such a good, like, I don't know, that's such a good thing. He thought it would hurt. Danielson says he thought it would hurt him to shake Eddie's hand. But there was a moment in that match where Danielson realized that him not respecting Eddie for 20 years ago was something that he was holding on to, that he personally needed to get over. He should have given Eddie that respect a long time ago. He says that he realized that if Eddie can get through his struggles, then he has to learn to see through his own bullshit too. Like, such a wholesome moment. There's so much positive masculinity flowing in this room here. And, you know, like so much depth of character in what they're saying as well. And such a, like, a brilliant blurring of kayfabe and real life. Cause like, you've got to think, like, this probably meant a whole lot to Eddie personally as well. Like, it seems both real, but also it's very character-driven at the same time.
Yeah, and the beauty of Eddie Kingston, and at his best, Bryan Danielson, is that sometimes you'll just never know where the line is drawn, and that's the beauty of it. Like, you will never know what's real, and what's just played up for TV, and I think that's, at the end of the day, what we really want from wrestling, is to be taken to a real emotional place through the simulation of combat that happens in the ring. And I love that their post-match segment verbalizes what they had done in the ring with their actions, and the ability that these two have to articulate emotion through action and through words is astonishing. There is another promo after this. I'm not sure if it happens in this promo, I can't recall, or some other, where Eddie Kingston says that Bryan Danielson is the closest thing we have now to Terry Funk, which is the highest compliment
That's huge.
Eddie Kingston could say about any wrestler. Okay, Eddie Kingston is on the record. He says Terry Funk is the greatest wrestler of all time, period. That's it. No discussion. And to say that Danielson is even in the same air as Funk is huge. And that speaks to sort of the respect they found for each other, at least on TV, through this series of matches.
Absolutely. I'll leave this match at that. Just a fantastic rivalry, a fantastic ending to it. Like, so much character growth throughout the whole thing, particularly when you track it from where these two were at in 2021 to all the way through to this, and like the way their characters change and subtly and at times like slowly over a long period. But then the way that it's shown through the match, as you said, like both through the match and then through what they say at the end, is it's brilliant. It's such a good match, such a meaningful thing that they're putting on here. Such a meaningful piece of wrestling art.
Yep, it's some of their best work in AEW, and it's sort of I think it meant a lot to them to have someone to work with that came up from like the same place in the industry and had the same sort of understanding and love for the material that they both enjoy. So yeah, to just see it coalesce into this series, into this match, it was wonderful.
I've got a question. Having said all that, Joseph, I've got a question. Where do you place this feud for them in terms of looking at their legacies as wrestlers? Like, when I think Eddie Kingston, personally, you've probably got a more broader perspective on this than me, but personally, I think Claudio and I think Moxley.
Sure.
And then when I think Danielson, I mean, where do you even, like, I think McGuinness, I think The Miz.
No, think for real. Yeah,
Authority.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think
absolutely.
Like, I then think also like Kofi Kingston. Then definitely, when, you know, yeah, he comes to AEW, that's like. But like, where do you place this in terms of like career rivalries for them? Because it feels like very meaningful for each of their characters at this point. But at the same time, like, I feel like they've done other stuff that's like really big and important as well. Where do you place it for yourself? Someone who's followed both of them for such a long time.
It's really hard because as with so much in AEW and pro wrestling as in general, you know, it's not an AEW exclusive problem, but it seems to come up a lot with them, is that it always feels like it's not quite exactly the best we could get from these two. Do you know what I mean? Like, we had that Anarchy in the Arena set up, but we never got like a blood bath between these two. It was a very restrained thing, a very sort of sporting rivalry at the end of the day, which probably ties into Danielson's history in ROH and Eddie's sort of angst about being kept out of that sort of high level of indie wrestling at the time. So they focused more on that like super wrestling champion challenger dynamic. But a part of me wants to see them really like tear into each other. Talking like blood flowing, you know, working over cuts and stuff. So yeah, in that way it is narratively complete, but it doesn't feel quite as sound and well explored as something that they may have done with other opponents. You mentioned a lot of great honorable mentions for both men. Claudio's work with Eddie, of course. Brian, just a whole host of rivalries across his long, long career. So yeah, it's hard to say that it ranks among the tippy top, but given how great it still is, sort of gives you an idea just how talented both guys are.
Yeah, and like, as I said, when we did that definitive match guide list ranking the top 50 matches from AEW's first 5 years back in 2024, but all three matches were represented in that. And along with the Bucks and the Lucha Bros, it was the most represented rivalry. So it's obviously something that people means a lot to people as well. Like, you know, you think about the rivalries that other people have had, you know, I think, you know, Omega and Hangman, Punk and MJF, you know, I think Hangman and Swerve, they'd only had a couple of matches before we put on that list. So maybe if we did that today, it would be slightly different. But yeah, like, this is a rivalry that's meaningful to people, particularly in the context of AEW. And it's easy to wax lyric about it. And another thing I wanted to ask you, Joseph, is like coming out of the Continental Classic, coming out of this, sorry, this match, Eddie was very quick to lose the Continental crown. He sort of lost at the next pay-per-view to Okada, and then he got injured, unfortunately. So it kind of like feels like he lost it and then got kicked off TV, when in actual fact, he lost it and then was unfortunately removed from TV. But each belt was sort of lost. He lost to Mark Briscoe, and then in the match where he got injured, he lost to Gabe Kidd. Where would you place this for Eddie's career in terms of like a high point? Is it like the high point of his career, winning the Continental Classic, winning this American Triple Crown? Where would you place it for him?
I'm sure a lot of people in my circle who have really, really, really intensely followed Eddie's career throughout the years there's a lot of disagreement about like Eddie's creative peak. This is inarguably his kayfabe and popularity peak, like just being on national TV, achieving multiple championship wins. Like there's just no overcoming that. But if we're talking about a creative peak, Eddie's talented enough that we could argue it. It's tough. It's a tough call. I think that this run in AEW has seen Eddie sort of synthesize a lot of the things he's learned through his career, and he's been able to apply it with opponents that can sort of maximize those strengths. People like Danielson and Punk and Moxley. So I think if we're talking about peaks of Eddie Kingston's career, it's this last few years with AEW, and you'd probably put it up against his start of the 2010s in Chikara, that run up to the Grand Championship, his reign with that title. I think those are the two points you look at as far as what is the very best of Eddie Kingston. And as with so many of the all-time greats, you're able to have a really rich debate, and that debate spans decades, and that's how awesome he is.
Mm. I've got to say, I've got a special place in my heart for, even though I didn't watch it live, I have sort of gone back and had a look at it. But when he does beat Mike Quackenbush for it's that so championship good. And everyone's in the ring, and if you watch AEW, you'll recognize a few faces.
For sure. And recognize some people whose faces aren't even revealed yet, but yeah, they're in that ring.
Yep. And that's like such like emotionally, it just feels so big, even though it's only a small arena and like a small promotion. It feels big, and it's a great match as well. So, if you're a fan of this match particularly, you're a fan of Eddie Kingston, worth going back and checking out that match a real high point.
I've been stewing a theory that Eddie Kingston winning the title at High Noon is maybe the best championship win of 2011, which is something of a hot take if you think about what else happens in 2011. But I'll have to revisit the material to be clear about that. I think that might actually be true, but I don't want to say it with full certainty yet.
Yeah, I'm always here for Eddie Kingston going over CM Punk, so
there you go.
I'll take that.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the spirit.
mate. Joseph, it's been a pleasure having you on today. I really appreciate you coming on. As I said, big fan of your content. If none of you have if any of you haven't listened to Joseph's stuff or seen it, I highly recommend his YouTube channel. Particularly, as I said, if you have never really gotten into All Japan but have thought of it as like, oh man, this is something I should maybe look at. Joseph's Walking the King's Road series is a really great series to sort of guide you through that and get you into that. And as I said, you've also got a book out there. Do you want to plug a bit about that book?
Yeah, if you're listening to this from the Philippines, you can order my book, In the Blood and Other Stories. It's a collection of horror short stories. You can purchase that from UP Press's website, or you can order it from their online stores via Shopee and Lazada. And if you're in the Philippines, you know what that means. Grab a copy. I would really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, Joseph, where else can the people find you?
The website is josephmontecelio.com. I put up a lot of written stuff on there, essays, match reviews, lists, present-day coverage, historical coverage. It's all there, josephmontecelio.com. I stream sort of every week, twitch.tv/josephweirdness. It's Joseph Weirdness on Twitter and Blue Sky, and Joseph Montecilio is the YouTube channel.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And for if you want to come and talk to me and talk to me about Eddie Kingston or talk to me about Brian Danielson, talk to me about this rivalry, tell me what you think of that match with Mike Quackenbush. You can do all of those things. You can find me at Sir_Samuel. Or even better yet, jump on the Social Suplex Discord. If you're a bit jaded by the way social media is fragmented and gone in all sorts of weird places and is now owned by people who have way too much money on their hands, then come join the Social Suplex Discord and you can find the AEW Match Guide thread there. You can even recommend a match if you'd like me to cover a specific AEW match. Jump in there and find me there. But we've got places that cover all aspects of the world of wrestling, all the different promotions. Also, we've got threads for each of the shows. And if you want to find another passion of mine, you can come join the cookouts thread where we post pictures of all of the delicious things that we're cooking in our kitchen. So you can find all that on the Social Suplex Discord. And make sure, of course, that you check out all of the other shows we've got on Social Suplex. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Things, and Imps WWE Adventure. And also, if in the new year, in 2025, if you do appreciate what we're doing, we would love it if you would be able to donate through Red Circle. That just helps pay for things like internet hosting and for gear and all that for our podcasts. Or you can jump on Chop Tees and check out our merch there. But that is all I've got time for today. Thanks to you again, Joseph, for joining me. As I said, very much appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me.
And yes, indeed. And next week, we're actually up to episode 49 of the AEW Match Guide, the actual Match Guide episodes. We're going to be talking about Hangman Page versus Darby Allin from 2024. A kind of forgotten about TV banger that those two had as a little bit of an introduction to the Hangman heel character that we haven't
Absolutely.
Talked about yet on the podcast. So make sure you tune in a fortnight's time. After that, I'll be doing something around Grand Slam, of course, with AEW coming to Australia, and I'll be actually attending the show in Brisbane. I'll be doing something then. So just make sure you subscribe to the feed and you'll find that then. But other than that, I'll be back in a fortnight's time for Hangman and Darby Allin, and I cannot wait to see you then. Until next time, I will catch you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.